For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, and another hola, this time to viewers in Argentina who've made it number 43 on our list of views by country. And yes, I know, the most interesting man in the world said that unless the rest of our conversation is going to be in Spanish, it shouldn't start hola. So, I could go on with por favor, suscríbete y apoya nuestro trabajo, but instead I'm going to talk about Spain, which just unwittingly furnished a demonstration project for the green energy transition. While we were in Senegal, in fact, investigating efforts by rich Western technologically advanced countries to force poor non-Western countries to forgo reliable, affordable hydrocarbon energy at the risk of going or staying dark, Spain and Portugal went dark. And the usual suspects were mystified. The New York Times rushed to print with, quote, the cause of the outage was unclear, end quote. But it is reasonable to treat it as a demonstration project, and net zero watch duly warned Britons that they might be next, because, as Heatmap noted, quote, Portugal has in the past gone several days in a row generating 100% of its power from renewables. Spain, meanwhile, was boasting of its 100% renewable generation just weeks before the blackout, end quote. And if it can happen even in fairly wealthy countries, then those nations struggling to escape poverty would surely be well advised to avoid it. As Tony Heller posted acerbically next to a satellite image of Spain in North Korean rural African darkness, quote, Spain achieves net zero ahead of schedule, end quote. And it's not a good look. In reporting the event, Euronews quoted Spain's prime minister that such a thing was unthinkable, which I do not believe is unfair to call denial when it just happened. And both the Manhattan Contrarian and Michael Schellenberger pointed to some of the important technical complexities involved, including, Schellenberger says, the problem of, quote, the lack of inertia, the physical buffer provided by traditional power plants that use heavy spinning machinery to stabilize the grid during sudden fluctuations, end quote. And what's more, do so automatically. Whereas, quote, solar panels and most modern wind turbines rely on inverters, which lack physical mass and can't cushion these shocks, end quote. Now, it might be unfair to ask the climate zealot in your family or your workplace to explain this issue, but surely grid managers can reasonably be expected to know about it. And as Roger Pilkey Jr. noted, many of them do know about it, but if they told the politicians, the latter either didn't listen, or didn't understand, or didn't care. And the politicians really are fanatics, including the ongoing weird insistence that Spain has got to shut down the nuclear energy that, in addition to being low carbon, still generates more electricity for them than wind and solar, and delivers this crucial stability that obviously the hasty push for trendy power-like sources is undermining. Could alternatives be done differently with more stability? Probably, if the job was entrusted to people who prefer practicality to virtue signaling. But meanwhile, Spain looking like North Korea really is a demonstration project for the mad rush to net zero. And speaking of mad rushes to net zero, with Canada's election over and the restrictions on free speech on policy issues during an election now lifted, we can observe that the new federal administration of Mark Carney is at once committed to net zero and obliged to revive the economy after a lost decade of sluggish productivity, weak investment, and minimal real wage growth. So, it's going to be an interesting demonstration project to see how they try to do it and what results. Especially because part of the Canadian national reaction to Donald Trump's annexation and tariff lack of charm offensive was supposedly this coast-to-coast, bottom-to-top realization that we'd been fools to neglect our economy so blithely, thus rendering ourselves vulnerable, and that we must and would do better. But did Prime Minister Carney and his Liberal associates really take it to heart? And even if they did they also take it to brain? We're about to find out, and we don't think it's going to be pretty. Because after all, Carney has spent 20 years doing well by doing good as a green zealot. And, without denying politicians' capacity for disingenuousness, we suspect that it's because he was, and is, a true believer. As Jordan Peterson commented to podcaster Joe Rogan, quote, all you have to do is read his book. But people don't, of course, because it's a book. Either he's decided that every single thing he's ever believed was wrong, right to the core, or he's a wolf in sheep's clothing, end quote. And we say, what big ears, tail, and teeth you have. Oh, by the way, many viewers of our videos on YouTube have complained, or complimented us on the invariable edition of that blue banner warning that the United Nations thinks we're naughty deniers, which we wear as a badge of honor. And recently, Wei Zhang complained on X that he wasn't on the Tortoise Media list of wicked climate skeptics, so we went and looked, and to our delight, we were. Unfortunately, they've now deleted the post or blocked us or something, see Transit Gloria Mundi, but sure enough, we're all over their database. From the other side, when in doubt, keep digging. The New York Times Climate Forward produces a climate fix, supposedly, quote, our twice-a-month guide to the most important solutions to climate change across the world, end quote. And recently, it was the world's biggest plane. And that will help how? Well, apparently wind turbines are doing so well that the blades are getting so big they, quote, often can't be easily shipped across aging roads and bridges, end quote. And of course, quote, the industry is now facing an even bigger problem, President Trump's antipathy toward wind power, end quote. But sauntering to the rescue is Radia, a company based in Boulder, Colorado, which, quote, has been working on developing what would be the world's largest plane, one that it said would have a dozen times the cargo volume of a Boeing 747, end quote. For a decade, still no plane? What could go wrong? Yeah, other than the carbon emissions from something with a dozen times the cargo volume of a 747. Though, if it never gets off the ground, that one will solve itself. Oh, and we still occasionally get people online thinking that peer review is the gold standard for studies of climate and anything else. But as Lynn Cohen wrote earlier this year in C2C Journal, the evidence grows increasingly strong that academia has totally lost the plot when it comes to keeping research honest, never mind reliable. It's getting to the point where peer-reviewed is a label meaning do not trust. But on the plus side on climate, while we were in Senegal, examples of what looks like a serious turn toward climate sanity across a wide range of issues kept arriving in the inbox. Starting with an Energy Bad Boys report that the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, just signed into law a bill, quote, allowing nuclear power to count as a clean resource in meeting the Centennial State's economy-wide greenhouse gas reduction mandates, end quote. And what makes that item especially remarkable, as they note, is that back in 2019, Polis campaigned aggressively on wind, solar, and battery storage, giving nuclear short shrift. Unfortunately, as they also note, like many states, Colorado has had rules for 50 years that make actually building nuclear plants impossible. But, forced to choose between red tape and emissions reductions, some on the left are actually putting aside their fondness for red tape. So stay tuned. Meanwhile, if ordinary voters are getting you down, as they apparently are Joe Biden, who just blamed the deplorable sexism and racism for the defeat of his goofy vice president in the 2024 election, Grist may have the solution you've been waiting for. Apparently, quote, scientists just found a way to break through climate apathy, end quote. And while progressives generally applaud the non-binary, here it's graphing things as either or rather than as trend lines. Yep. That's the ticket. They must really think we're fools, to the point that they're no longer reluctant to say so publicly, and instead share with us their plans for manipulating us into passive compliance. The specific case in point here is the claim that Princeton's Lake Carnegie used to freeze and people skated and had warm family experiences and were generally bucolic. But now, thanks to the dreaded climate change, it doesn't, and the dumbos aren't getting it. So, social science to the rescue. Quote, Liu worked with professors at Princeton to test how people responded to two different graphs. One showed winter temperatures of a fictional town gradually rising over time, while the other presented the same warming trend in a black or white manner. The lake either froze in any given year, or it didn't. People who saw the second chart perceived climate change as causing much more abrupt changes, end quote. Now, a co-author insisted that, quote, we are not hoodwinking people, end quote. See, it's more like nudge theory, this progressive fantasy that they could alter people's behavior on the cheap because, generally speaking, human beings are so docile that a mere tap rather than a big subsidy will have them all in the pen munching happily on their preferred grass. As G.K. Chesterton prophetically warned nearly a century ago, quote, we have seen the end of the age of reason and we live in the age of suggestion. Perhaps for the first time, the degradation of man has been openly declared in a theory that he can be persuaded without being convinced, end quote. And again, what's most extraordinary about the story isn't the fact of manipulation, including via graphics a la How to Lie with Statistics. It's that, like the Pompidou Center, this stuff has the ugly mechanics on the outside in plain view instead of hidden behind an attractive facade. Of course, treating people like idiots does have a rather sorry history of causing them to dislike you, so they neither vote nor agitate in the way that you want. And another thing. In Canada's C2C Journal, Jack Wright takes aim at a Supreme Court decision-like object in the Greenhouse Gas Reference, also known as, quote, Reference-Re Greenhouse Gas Pollution Pricing Act 2021, end quote. And yes, even the terminology might sound like a sleep aid, but stay with us here. We at the CDN actually think that the ruling was correct in one key point. The federal government clearly does have the power to legislate and regulate on matters that cross provincial and national borders, and that would include greenhouse gases if they were dangerous. But Wright demonstrates that the decision was a hideous mess in many other regards, including that the scientific basis of the legislation in question seems to have been swallowed whole by the court, who are not climate scientists, based on a brief from a senior bureaucrat, who isn't one either. And while we have great respect for the informed layperson and want them involved in public debates, we also think it's more than fair, it's essential, to say that anyone who challenges skeptics on climate on the basis of credentialism should be vocally opposed to this way of making policy. But we're not holding our breath. In the newsletter, we also continue our Look It Up series by being reminded recently, hat tip to Parker Gallant, of a website that we relied on 6 years ago for our climate emergency tour. Yes, 6 years. We've been here that long, thanks to your kind support. And the site in question is weatherstats.ca, which gives easy access to historical Canadian weather records and does it in a convenient graphical format. Oh, the fun you'll have year after year. For instance, here's the Ottawa temperature record back to 1871. The top line shows the annual, July 1st to June 30th, maximum daytime high. The bottom line is the annual minimum nighttime low. And the green line is the average of the two. And what you can see, possibly if you squint hard enough, is that minimum temperatures have risen a little bit, but maximum temperatures haven't. In fact, the peak value of 37.8 degrees Celsius was reached 5 times, all before the end of World War II, 1944, 1921, 1917, 1916, and 1913, and never since. Now, here's the chart of average wind speed back to 1952, because it's another one of those climate things that everybody knows is getting worse, but apparently nobody ever bothers to look up. Do you see a trend? We don't, except maybe downwards. As is also true of snow cover, and here the data go back to 1954. They show no trend, or perhaps an increase over the past 20 years. Some climate catastrophe this one's turning out to be. And you can invite your alarmist relatives over and teach them how they too can learn to stop worrying and look it up, or at least stop visiting you. And speaking of Arctic ice, here with a T of the H to Roger Pilkey Jr., we bring you a paper with a sort of title that leaves us scratching our heads, though the message of the contents is actually simple enough. The thing's called, quote, Surprising but Not Unexpected Multidecadal Pause in Arctic Sea Ice Loss, end quote. And this new study by UK and US scientists reports that ever since the experts started warning that the Arctic would soon be ice-free, the ice stopped melting. Which apparently was surprising, but not the least bit surprising, because climate models do a good job of explaining it, except for the fact that they don't explain it very well. And now that it's happened, scientists are pretty sure it's happening. What's more, they have theories about why, such as climate's complicated and full of surprises. Gosh, really? Who knew? And finally, from the CO2science.org archive, if you saw our video on global greening, you learned about C3 versus C4 plants. And you'll know that C3 plants starve for CO2 when levels are low because they aren't as efficient at using it as C4 plants. And the CO2science.org archive reports that in 2019, there were 5 experiments exposing Stipa bicalensis, which is a common grass species in the C3 group, to extra CO2. In response to an extra 300 parts per million in the atmosphere, the average growth boost was 105%, meaning the plants doubled in size. Talk about greening. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I want Senegal to catch up with the Western energy, not the other way around. Thank you.